Welcome back. It's the Motley Fool Radio Show, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. I'm joined once again by Motley Fool personal finance expert, Dayana Yoakum. Dayana, welcome. Happy September.
Thank you, David. To you, too.
Thank you. Without hesitation, let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Danny's on the line. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What's on your mind this weekend?
Not much. Just I was listening to Marketplace. And they started talking about Vonage going public, and I was sort of interested in whether or not that'd be a good stock to buy, because they didn't really go into the details, you know, whether they were promoting it or saying stay away from it. They kind of gave a mixed review.
Right. So Vonage is, well, it lists itself as the broadband phone company. And Dayana, you and I were talking about this recently, because are you going to be a new customer of Vonage yourself?
I am, although I appreciate the French lilt by with you, which you are both pronouncing it.
Yeah.
I believe it is pronounced Vonage.
I think it depends what country.
Vonage. Well, if we want to take this call and talk in the French accent, we call it Vonage. I am a new customer of Vonage. Danny, are you a Vonage customer?
I am not.
Well, we should explain to listeners what it is. Vonage is Voice Over Internet Protocol Company. Basically, it's your telephone line, and instead of the copper cables running through the system, you're bypassing Ma Bell, and you're making phone calls using your internet connection, your cable modem.
Right, because in the end, it's just sending sound over a different line. It's just bits, and whether you're sending browser instructions for your Internet Explorer browser or a phone conversation to whoever's on the other end of the line, internet cabling can do all of that. So that's why this company calls itself the broadband phone company and certainly has made quite an imprint in the industry.
Well, one of the reasons is price, because, you know, what I signed up for was $25 flat fee, all my unlimited phone calls, long distance, local, and it comes with a lot of different things like call waiting, call forwarding, obviously voicemail. So it's
who are you saying goodbye to, by the way, just as a customer?
Verizon, this is your Dear John letter.
Certainly Verizon. I mean, all of the phone companies are definitely struggling in the face of this, and some of them are trying to participate too. Danny, you're asking about the stock. You're saying, is this a stock that you should consider buying?
Right. One of the concerns I had heard on Marketplace was something dealing with 911 calls being routed differently and not necessarily being answered or being sent to different, you know, locations, because it isn't exactly, you know, the standard phone systems that we're used to.
Mm-hmm. That's a very legitimate concern. And some people are wondering, well, you know, is it as dependable? Is the dial tone always there? What about the voice quality? I think it's safe to say that enough people are doing this and trying this that it's probably, if it's not all the way there yet in terms of its dependability and quality, it probably will get there. I think the world is going this way.
Well, and probably one of the reasons the company's even going public, it's to raise cash so it can ensure that the infrastructure is in place to ensure perfect quality.
That's right. And in fact, this week you may have heard, or just recently, Danny, eBay making a bid for Skype. Did you see that news?
No, I didn't, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, so Skype does something very similar, and eBay is willing to pay in excess of $2 billion to buy this private company. So if you are operating in this industry, if you're the CEO of Vonage or any of these companies, that can't be bad news. So I think in the end, it's more a conversation, and this is the way we'll close it, it's more a conversation about should you be buying an IPO stock. Vonage has said, we are going to IPO. That means we're going to become a public company. It's an exciting situation, but most IPOs these days will trade lower a few months after the day they come out on the stock market than that big hype day when they first show up. Were you aware of that?
Yeah, I had heard about it on Marketplace.
So, I mean, it absolutely can be the case that this could be a good company with a good stock, but in some cases, you're rewarded for showing some patience the first few months, because as you might imagine, there's a lot of build-up to the IPO, and sometimes companies trade up really big that first day. But if you just show some patience and start buying 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, assuming it's a good company, you're often getting a better price. So I think what you should consider in the end is, if you are motivated to follow this company, study it, research it, you want to see in those filings before it comes public, you're going to see what the sales of the company are. Is it a profitable company today? How much cash do they have? Some basic questions you'll be able to answer. But most of all, I think if you're motivated to make this an investment, I would probably encourage you to invest a minority of your eventual position at the start. Let's say you're going to invest $1,000 in the stock. Take $300 and invest early. Then maybe $300 a couple months later and $300 a couple months after that. In other words, ease your way into the position, because often with IPOs, they just trade down after that big first day.
All right. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thanks for bringing a very interesting company to our attention.
All right.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. Give us a call on this beautiful weekend. Hope your weekend's beautiful. Tracy in Charlotte, North Carolina, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to talk to you.
Well, very kind of you to say. What shall we talk about?
I'm interested in the possibility of using a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan to pay off some outstanding debt, and wondered how you felt about that. Is it a... It is an option, but is it a good option?
Okay, we've talked about home equity lines of credit on this show before. And paying off debts with home equity is one option. A lot of people do tap into the equity they've built up in their home for that. Also for home improvements and paying for college.
Mm-hmm.
But Tracy, let me ask you, what kind of debt are we talking about?
What type is credit card?
Yeah. Credit card debt. Okay.
Credit card debt, yes.
And are we talking double digit, triple digit, quadruple?
We're talking... just about double digit.
Okay. Let me ask you this, and it's not necessarily something that has a bearing on my answer here, but what got you into debt? Was it a job loss, medical bills, just basic spending on stuff?
No, it wasn't reckless lifestyle.
Okay.
Definitely not. It was actually the result of divorce. Mm-hmm. And two relocations, and for a bit being unemployed, absolutely. So it's an over and done thing. It's not an ongoing situation.
So I hear you.
I have managed to maintain an excellent credit rating, so that's in my favor. This is primarily for the convenience of writing one check a month versus multiple checks, and also I'm interested in the possibility of a tax deduction.
Those are all great reasons to use home equity to pay off credit card debt.
Particularly the convenience part, which I think is usually underrated in life.
Now, I know I really shouldn't even consider that, but darn it,
yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
Some people will try to save an extra, I don't know, 1 or 2 basis points, like 1/100th of a percent on their interest rate, because it'll save them a little money, but they're actually encouraging more and more chaos in their own lives as they write multiple checks.
That's
so
right.
Let's make sure we have that perspective.
Now, normally I would say don't touch the home equity for something like credit card debt because of that, as I alluded to before, the reckless spending part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to, you know, quickly pay off the debt sort of doesn't discourage that type of behavior from happening in the future, the spending with, you know, wantonly. Mm-hmm. Living above one's means. But obviously that's not the reason that you got into credit card debt. But let me suggest another path. And David might not like this because it isn't the convenient, it isn't the most convenient way to do it.
But, I have an open mind.
But it is the one that really does preserve the equity in your home. And also, if you've got the means to do it, I would say don't tap into the home to pay this down. Number one, negotiate. Whatever interest rates are on your credit cards right now, call your lenders. Ask them if they can do better. Since you have a good credit record, you probably will qualify for other better offers or getting them in the mail. Go ahead and move your balances to the lowest interest rate credit card you can.
What is the interest rate on that credit card debt, Tracy?
There are a total of 4 accounts. One of them is a 0% interest, until next September.
Mm-hmm.
The other 3 are 9% or below.
Those aren't bad. Next, I would concentrate on the 9% ones.
Okay.
All of your extra funds, if you can do so, scrape it together. Pay the minimums on time on those other accounts. Very important.
Mm-hmm.
But concentrate all of the extra money on the highest interest rate card. Get that paid down. And then third step, obsess. Be obsessed about doing that with the rest of them.
Okay.
Do you think you can do it on your own without tapping into the equity on your...
I can. It's just kind of, it's such an uphill battle, and there you don't see a whole lot of result terribly quickly, which
mm-hmm.
is why it gets so discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And I am following exactly what you say, and I am paying the one that's, I think it's 9.3%, paying much more than the minimum every month. But, you know, I'm still getting whacked with that 9% again every month.
Yeah.
So my attitude was that if I could pay them all off in one shot, my minimum payment for what we calculated would be half of what I'm writing out now,
mm-hmm.
which would allow me to keep spending the same amount of money. In other words, if for the sake of example, my minimum payment would be $250. If I'm already spending $500 a month towards these cards, that's what I would continue to do, so that I can knock it out in a good 3 to 3.5 years.
Gotcha. Well, then it sounds like that might be the plan for you if you really aren't seeing progress. And I know that the what we talked about before is actually called the snowballing method. and the snowball starts off as, you know, a tiny little handful of itty-bitty flakes that don't amount to much. But mm-hmm. surprising how quickly that can become something, you know, that you will notice.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, even on the cards that are 6 or 7%, if the minimum monthly payment is only $75, when I turn it around and get the statement, I've just gotten whacked with $60 in interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I just feel like I'm really flushing money down the toilet.
Yeah, it's hard to play that game and to only pay the minimums on accounts when you see that happening.
Yeah.
And that is why the negotiation part of the equation is so important,
okay.
because a few percentage points can make a big difference.
Right.
And we're not talking basis points, David. We're talking actual percentage points here.
I can deal with both of those.
But I want to say, you know, the advice about, you know, keeping away from the home equity is probably one that's good for the majority of people to, mm-hmm. to hear. You just don't want to get into a situation where the home is on the line,
mm-hmm.
Should you become unable to repay the debts. But it really sounds like, Tracy, that you have a handle on your finances. You've clearly run the numbers mm-hmm. here. And if it makes more sense to get a home equity loan to really bat these things down, mm-hmm. then take that same resolve that we were talking about in paying off the credit cards and make sure you pay off that home equity loan as quickly as possible so you're not paying interest on that and also basically building back up the equity in your home.
Is there a significant difference in the equity loan versus the home equity line of credit?
Well, they are different products.
Okay.
A home equity line of credit works like a credit card in that, say, you've got $10,000 available to draw down from, whereas a home equity loan, you're actually getting
a fixed amount.
Exactly. And
mm-hmm.
and the payment structures can also be a little bit different.
Would you recommend one over the other?
It depends on your circumstances. It sounds like this is something where you could take a lump sum and just pay it off and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is nice to have a home equity line of credit. We've talked about this before on the show, where having that kind of line of cash that's available to you should something happen,
mm-hmm.
having it already established is good. You do pay something for the privilege,
mm-hmm.
but not that much. So
okay.
I would look into both. I would take a visit to Bankrate.com if you have internet access. They've got some great articles.
Okay.
Tracy, I hope we've been helpful.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your advice.
Foolish best wishes.
Take care now.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, 866-677-3665. We welcome all financial questions and comments. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Jason, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us. What's on your mind this weekend?
Well, basically, I am 24, so very young, and I have not a lot of money, but a decent amount of money sitting in a cash account that needs to be invested. And I have a couple individual stocks, a couple mutual funds, but I have most of my money just sitting in cash, mm-hmm. basically doing nothing.
I feel
pretty bad about that.
Yeah, why is it sitting in cash?
I ask myself that every couple weeks.
And what do you answer?
I say, I'll do it next week.
Yeah, I mean, I know this feeling, by the way. I actually suffer from this problem myself because I have accounts for each of my children, and some of that money is not invested. And I keep telling myself, I will get that invested. I'm the Motley Fool guy, after all. I have to get that money invested. But sometimes, and I don't know if this is the case for you, Jason, but if it is a fair amount of money, at least in your case, perhaps you're sitting there going, whoa, this is kind of a big decision. I need to do this right. I don't want to go in and make a big – I don't want to flub it up.
Exactly. I'm still young. I can take risk. I don't mind. You know, if I lose it all, I can make it all back.
And yet you said there's a fair amount of cash there, right?
Yes, yes.
Is it a lack of ideas?
Oh, maybe it's too many ideas.
Oh, he's commitment shy. A 24-year-old man that's commitment shy. That's
Do you want to
novel.
Talk some about your personal relationships and
well,
when they've
yes.
ended? What why?
Well,
you're usually breaking up, right?
Right. Actually, I have a fiance. We've been together for five years now, to the date, exactly.
So, Dana, did you accuse Jason of being shy about committing? I mean,
it's
for 5 years, from 19 to 24, he's been committed.
Exactly.
He has a fiance.
Jason, how long have you been engaged?
Well, we've been engaged for 2 months. We're trying to find the perfect wedding, location wedding, and we don't have a date yet.
Okay.
That's
fine.
That's great. Congratulations.
I'm going to Jason is financially commitment shy, it sounds like.
I'm wondering what his fiance, I don't know if she knows about this cash that you have yet to invest, but would she have any opinion herself?
She just wants me to make a lot of money so she can hang out.
Okay, good. Hang out. Right. That's what I want to do in life, too, by the way. But I think you should do this. I think you should take that money and don't think of it as one pile. Think of it in terms of 10 to 15 little piles. Okay. And then make a commitment to invest one of those piles, let's say, every month.
Okay.
So that over the course of the next year, you're going to get that money invested. You're not going to make it an all or nothing decision. You're going to make it a 1 out of 12 or 1 out of 13 decision. You're going to take each of those piles and you're going to put it toward whatever you think that month would be the best place to put it, and you're going to spread that money out over time. So if we're talking about mutual funds or stocks, if you're comfortable with stocks, you're going to own 5 to 10 different things 1 year from now, and you will have slowly and systematically entered that money into those new assets. And then you'll end up with a portfolio, and you'll think, wow, somewhere right around the time you're getting married, wow, I have a portfolio now. It's fairly diverse. It's taking some risk. It has time to grow, and I'll add stuff as we go, but I got my money invested.
That's a great idea.
I'm saying to you exactly what I did myself 10 years ago when I was in a similar situation, because when my grandfather died, I got some money from him, and I didn't exactly know what to do. And then I realized, you know, the best thing to do is just take a portion of it and get that invested, because then I feel less pressure. And if I'm an idiot or pick the wrong stock or my first move blows up in my face, darn it, I still have, you know, 9/10 or 14/15 left. And so I think that's what, for a lot of people, is the lubricant to make the engine run.
Well, great. Well, can I invest in Motley Fool hats?
You know, Motley Fool hats are only obtainable by playing one of our signature Motley Fool radio show games. And Jason, I am right now, right here, going to invite you or anyone else listening to the show to give us a call during the week and put yourself forward as somebody who'd like to compete.
Excellent.
Some weeks we have dozens of people who want to jump in, and sometimes we're actually scrapping a little bit. We're saying, whoa, we only have two people this week who said they would take the challenge of the Motley Fool radio show game. So
exactly.
That's the way to get your Motley Fool ball cap, and we look forward to featuring you on a future show.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Best of luck and congratulations.
Thanks.
And that's all the time we have this week for the Fool Phones. The Fool phone lines are always open for your financial questions and comments. Diana, what is the number?
The number is 866-NPR-FOOL.
You are on your game. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.